The sound of the shofar, the ram's horn, traditionally awakens us to the spiritual work of the new year. This year, beginning on Monday, September 29th at sunset, will be the year 5769. Our friend and teacher, Michael Kagan, helps us to prepare and understand. We're coming towards another moment in the Jewish year, another punctuation, exclamation point, pause, comma. How would you describe this moment we're arriving at, Michael?
I would say it's a turning point. Hooray! Rosh Hashanah Lishanot, to turn. Okay, from Lishanot, to change, to turn. To bring into a cycle, to complete a loop, another round in the spiral. Rosh Hashanah is the head of changes. Out of all the changes that we do in the year, they seem to all come together at this moment for that great shift that the universe opens up for us. This is what we call the new year, the head of changes. Has many names actually in Hebrew. It's very interesting, and we'll go into this more. In the Torah, it doesn't say Rosh Hashanah. In fact, the whole concept of a new year doesn't exist. It's like birthdays. Birthdays as the beginning, cycle, counting, just doesn't exist. The only time birthday is mentioned is actually for Pharaoh. But within the Jewish system, and Torah I'm talking about, there's no such thing as birthdays, no such thing as New Year's. Later, in Rabbinic Judaism, we have the famous Mishnah at the beginning of Masechet Rosh Hashanah, the tractate of Rosh Hashanah, that says there are four beginnings of the year. There's one for kings, there's one for fruit, there's one for sheep, there's one for trees, there's Rosh Hashanah. Torah never talks about this. It says it's the time of the great blowing, Teruah, the great blowing. It doesn't say why, it just says it is. Then that's on the first of the month of Tishrei. And then on the 10th of the month of Tishrei, it's the day of Yom Kippur, of the Day of Atonement. But very, very little is written about Rosh Hashanah or this first day, this festival. That's a blowing of the horn. And this ambiguity, this gap that was left in the Torah narrative, is taken up by Chazal, the rabbis, the sages, to spin into this amazing day of this is a new year, this is the time of doing tshuva, tshuva from coming around, if you want, repentance. Of the day of the king, right? This is the day of the king, when we crown God, in spite of everything. We crown God with great festivities and eating and blowing of coronation horns, and it's called Yom HaDin, the day of judgment. So that's another aspect of the day. Not only does the king come, he judges. So we have New Year. We have Day of Judgment, Day of the King, Day of the Blowing, of the Great Blowing. Chazal, the rabbis, built this amazing web around this day until it is like such a joyful occasion. Not only one day, and we have 2 days, okay? So one day wasn't enough. Now we have 2 days. And so much of it is spent in synagogue, going through the liturgy of prayers, emphasizing kingship. Emphasizing memory, Yom HaZikaron, that was the one I forgot, the Day of Memories. What is the Day of Memories? Okay. What is the Day of Memories? Big mystery, you know, I almost forgot that one. The Day of Memories, the Day of Kingship, the Day of the Great Blowing of the Blasts of the Shofar, the New Year, we have all the festivities around apples and honey, a sweet new year, and then there are pomegranates, and then there is all the various foods that appear on the table, ritual foods over which blessings are made for a long life, and to keep the tempter away, and to keep the enemies away, and to bring many mitzvot into our lives, and sweetness, and it's just like multiplies and multiplies, and it's such a paradoxical festival. You know, if you think about Pesach, Passover, I mean, that's easy, okay? We leave Egypt,
right?
Festival coming out of Egypt. And Yom Kippur, the Festival of Atonement. So you don't eat all day, you're fasting, you're in synagogue all day, you're going through whatever inner stuff, you're going Sukkot, you have the Festival of the Tabernacle, the Schach and the Lulav and Etrog, the four species and the waving. Oh, Rosh Hashanah, what a mix-up. Yom HaDin, a day of trembling. And the great shofar is sounded, and even the angels are trembling on this day of judgment. The king arrives and the coronation is blown and the food is set and there is this singing and rejoicing. But Yom HaDin, how do you, can you feel the tension of two things? And what about my own tshuva, my own turning, my own repentance, my own life? So there are a lot of tensions in this day, I think more than almost any other day. And let's take it apart a little bit and see where we get to. So let's unpack this a little bit. And see what elements we can get out of from this juxtaposition of moods, of the joy and the shaking, the din. Well, the one thing we do know about the day that comes from biblical text is the shofar, okay? Or at least the sounding of the shofar. So let's look for a moment at references in Torah and Midrashic literature on the significance of the blowing of the shofar. Now, when is the first time that there is a hint of the shofar? And that takes us back to the Akedah, the binding of Isaac. Abraham is told, take your son, your only son, the one you love, and offer him up. As we all know, son and father, father and son, make this trek, leave the donkeys and the lads below the mountain, and up they go to the mountain that God has appointed, that God has shown them. And there, on the way up, the boy carries the wood, the father carries the knife and the fire. We learn from the text hints that they both know what's going to happen. The father builds an altar, binds the son, stretches him out, pulls back his head, takes the knife, and is about to slash when the angel calls out, Avraham, Avraham, and Avraham says, Hineni. Do not lay your hand upon the child, for now I know that you believe in me. Now, Avraham, at that moment, this is Midrash, okay? According to the Midrash, at that moment, Avraham is there. Can you imagine the scene? He's all, you know, adrenaline is running. He's about to do the ultimate, good or bad, and I'm not going to judge this right now. At least what appears to be the word of the Lord, okay? And he says, according to the Midrash, oh, please, just a scratch. Just a little bit of blood, just to show that I'm prepared to do this. If God, this is what you want, I am prepared to do this. So at least let me a drop of blood draw. And the angel says, not even a drop of blood. Withdraw your hand right away. Drop that knife. Put your hands up.
Step away from
the boy. And Avram goes, but shucks, I'm really ready. And he lifts up his eyes, which is spiritual terminology for Yisayinav, and he lifts up his eyes. It's not that he opens his eyes. It's not that he notices out of the corner of his eye. For Yisayinav v'ra'ah, and he opens his eyes. A veil is lifted from his eyes, and he now sees something that he was never able to see before because it was hidden from him. And that is a ram caught by its horn in the thicket, just over there. And he goes, untangles the thorn from the horn, the thorns from the horn, drags the ram up and sacrifices the ram instead of the son. And God says, on this place will be the place that I will see. Ha Moriah, the mountain of seeing. And this is Yerushalayim. This is Jerusalem. This is the Holy of Holies. This is where the temple was going to be built, on that stone where Isaac was resting on. That's the foundation stone. Again, this is our mythology. This is our Midrash. And God says, this will be the place that I will see. See what? See you and give you repentance. Now, instead of your sons or instead of yourselves, you can offer up a substitute, the ram. I do not want your son. I do not want your life. There is the possibility of a substitute. Now, before we go into that one, the question is asked, a beautiful question. Wait a minute. That was a bit of a coincidence. At the very moment that Avraham was looking around wondering, where am I going to get blood from? There happens to be a ram caught in the thicket by its horn. And the Midrash says, how long was it waiting there for? Can you guess the answer? Since the beginning of time, which makes it a very old and patient ram. And sinewy. And finally it has been seen, and it's dragged, and now it says, I have fulfilled my duty, and is killed. That's all it has to do in life. Wait and be cut. But I want to go deeper. What does it mean since the beginning of time? And in our mythology, it's said that the ram was created just before Shabbat, together with half a dozen other things, just as creation ended. God slipped these little things into the world that were necessary, but sort of, I don't know, as an afterthought, but didn't fit into all the other categories of vegetation, of animals, of men. But these little things, like the first tongs. Tongs. To be able to take tongs out of a fire, you need tongs to take anything out of a fire. But how do you make tongs? You make it in a fire. So how are you going to take the first tongs out of the fire? So God made the first tongs so we would have the ability to take something out of the fire. Well, you know, many other things. But the ram was one of those that was there from the beginning. Which means that the concept of tshuva, of repentance, of gaining forgiveness, is in the hardwiring of the universe. It's there from the beginning. It's not given to us later and say, God says, well, you know what? It ain't working out, so I'm going to give you some other way of doing it. I mean, that's the way we actually read the story, but the Midrash goes further and says, actually, tshuva, the ability to have a second chance, and a third chance, and a fourth chance, and a fifth chance, is there in the very fiber of the universe. This is the secret of Yerushalayim, of Jerusalem. This is the secret of the sacrifices in Jerusalem. We talked about this in a previous conversation about Christianity and Judaism, how they diverged while looking for this common thread. And the Akedah, the binding of Isaac, is a central and crucial story for Christianity and the understanding of Jesus bringing atonement. In our story, it's the ram that brings atonement, the sacrifice of the other. Now, what does this mean? Each one of us born in this world is unique. I don't know any two people who are the same, even twins. We all have different parents, or different age. If we have siblings, then we are a different age, and we know that, you know, who comes first is different from who comes second, different from who comes last. We have different facial features, we have different voice, we have different fingerprints, we have different personalities, we have different talents. And so from a spiritual point of view, we can understand that we each have different tasks to do in this world. This is a spiritual given. We each have a unique task to carry out in this world, and each of us are a unique blend of factors that allow us to fulfill our task. Now, if I were to ask you, okay, you're an American. American sport would be, let's say, basketball. Okay, so you have a basketball game. And as far as I know, because I'm English, I don't know about basketball. Football would be mine. But it's known that each of the players have different tasks to play, and each one is trained to fulfill their task. There are the guards, and there is the shooters, and there's the okay. Now, what happens when a player is on for the game, and he's just not playing well? You know, he has an off night. He's substituted. The whistle is blown. Time out. He comes off. Next guy, but he could probably say, "Oh, give me another chance. Oh, come on. I know I could do it." And the coach is not going to take any chances. I'm sorry, I'm not going to risk the whole game just because, you know, you want another chance. No, you're off. Substitute is on. Substitute does well. You can put on your sweat jacket. That's it. Your game's over. Now, Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaDin. If God would judge us according to the full strength of din, of judgment, and look at each one of us and say, so are you doing your job in the world that I created you for uniquely? Most of us, if not all of us, would fail. And if so, we're out of the game. You're a waste of energy. Who needs you? Pulled out of the game. Done. Just like Isaac was about to be done. Gone. Out of the game. I'm not suggesting that Isaac was sacrificed because he'd failed his task. Or maybe the ram, okay? Remember this. In the Jewish scheme of things, the symbol for chesed, loving kindness, for mercy, for compassion, is the moon. The moon is the female, the mother. It waxes and wanes. Okay, many of our festivals are on the full moon. Sukkot, the festival of bounty, of Shefa. God's bounty flows through us and we're praying for rain and we cover the sukkah with so many good things. And Pesach, the festival of freedom where God took us out and gave us. So the festival that is on the no moon, there is only one, Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, it's the first of Tishrei. Ah, now if you're sharp, you would say, but wait a minute. It's not on no moon, it's on the beginning of the moon. Right? How do we know when the year starts? By two witnesses witnessing the new moon. There is no festival in Judaism that's centered around no moon, a black spot on your calendar. There is none. All our festivals, or I should say, all our beginnings, the Rosh Hashanah, the Rosh Chodesh, the new months, are all the beginning, the sliver of the moon. That's how we count things, the sliver of the moon. Which means that the day of judgment is not 100% judgment. Because if it would be, none of us would stand it. None of us would stand, be able to stand before the holy throne of judgment and say, yeah, hey man, I'm doing my job. Okay, maybe the greatest of the tzaddikim, but none of us. So there is this sliver of the moon which says there's a sliver of compassion in the world. That God allows us to go on till Yom Kippur and to do our tshuva, our cheshbon nefesh, our accounting of our souls, yes, accounting of our deeds, in that we can make the shift between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And even then it doesn't end, and it continues till Sukkot. And even there it continues to the end of Sukkot. So, and in fact, it continues all the time. But if it would be no moon, if it would be totally dark out there, none of us would be able to stand up on that day. And many of the songs and prayers that we say on Rosh Hashanah cry out, God, don't judge us in the fullness of your din, of your judgment. You know, please move from that chair to the other chair, to the chair of compassion, because I'm only human. I'm only human. So, where do we go? We've got a big circles here. So, we are allowed to substitute the ram instead of ourselves. Yes, we are not taken out of the game. We have a chance of turning. Now, what is it that tells us that we need to turn at all? The shofar. The shofar is a wake-up call. Wake up! Where are you? Now, I want to let you into a secret here. It's a bit difficult to do this just over through a microphone, I got to admit. So you're going to have to imagine a whiteboard now. Okay, I'm standing in front of a whiteboard, and I'm going to tell you the secret of life. I'm going to reveal to all of you the secret of all, of meaning of all life. Okay, now there's a whiteboard in front of me. I have a black crayon in my hand or marker, and I'm drawing a line from the bottom to the board all the way to the top of the board, and I'm making it into an arrow. So it's got an arrowhead. That's it. It's the meaning of life. What, you may say? I've been puzzling my whole life to know about the meaning of life, and it's just that. That is. You start at the beginning. You travel along your river of life until you get to the end. That's your life. If only it were that simple. Here is another line that I'm drawing. About a third up from the straight arrow, I'm drawing a curve that extends out to the right. So I now have a bend that comes out and points to the right, also with an arrowhead on it. Somewhere in our lives, we went off track. For whatever reason, we took the wrong turning. And we've started to wander out along that direction that's horizontal, that's away, 90 degrees away from my flow of life. It could have been for some children before they were even born. Hearing the screams of their parents, the arguments, maybe a cocaine baby born in pain. But for many of us, at a certain point in our life, sooner or later, we're off the track. It's called coming out of the Garden of Eden. And we're now off track and we're wondering why our lives are so difficult. Why doesn't it flow? What have I done wrong? Plod on, plod on. Now, there is a poem by Robert Bly called Four Ways of Knowledge. And there are four ways that he is trying to tell us. This is the third part of the poem. The first is by dreams. Maybe in a dream you'll get told you're going the wrong way. A nightmare, an enlightenment dream. And you'll wake up in the morning and realize, wait a minute, I'm not meant to be in this life. I'm meant to be somewhere else. Or it could be coincidences. You open a book at a certain page and there it says it. You say, wow, isn't that amazing? It's just the information I needed at this moment to change my life. Or it could be ill health. Or it could be catastrophes, an accident, a car accident, a divorce, anything like that. It's all wake-up calls. Robert Bly ends the poem by saying, I would rather it be just a dream, but unfortunately it always ends up as the catastrophe and the pain. Doesn't have to be like that. And we are blessed, let me tell you, we are blessed with Rosh Hashanah because we have the shofar. And the shofar says, wake up now. Remember, Yom HaZikaron, remember who you are. Remember where you came from. Remember where you're going. Make the change. Turn again. Turn again. Now we blow the shofar as a wake-up call. And this wake-up call connects us not only to our memory, but to deep memory. What do I mean by deep memory? We already mentioned that the use of the shofar in Rosh Hashanah is connected to the Akedah, the ram that appeared caught by its horn in the thicket. The next time we hear of the shofar is Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, where it says, and the sound of the shofar grew louder and louder and louder and louder. And that was an amazing event. And to get louder and louder and louder, humans can't do that. This is the sound of God approaching. I don't know what it sounds like. I mean, it sounds like the shofar blowing. And then the shofar appears a few more times, but we're also told that when the Mashiach comes, he'll come with the blast of the shofar. And we're also told when the creation started, it was the Big Bang, the sound of the shofar. When the Big Bang happened, whatever this means, it was a blast. And on scientific grounds, that blast can still be detected as the background radiation of 4 degrees Kelvin is a background radiation. And I like to think of that as the remnant of the blast. It's still percolating through the universe, the blast of the shofar of the Big Bang. So, when we blow the shofar today, we can experience not only the actual sound waves hitting our ears, going into the sensory process, going into our brains, doing whatever it is, waking us up, remembering who am I, but it actually resonates through this what we call morphic wave and ties in and resonates with Matan Torah, with the Akedah, with the beginning of time, and with the end of time, and with all the shofarot that are blown now and throughout time, everything vibrates. And if you can tune into that vibration, man, that's a real vibe. I mean, you really go in and you actually are not remembering intellectually, but are vibrating with the vibration of the universe. That's the power of the shofar. That's why the shofar can't be made from anything other than a ram's horn. Can't be made from a composite carbon alloy, even though it would sound much better, but be much easier to blow. Okay, because it's only by blowing from this instrument can that resonance be set up. It's not just sound, it's the actual instrument.
But we have several different forms.
There's a few, there's the long spirally one, there's the short curved one. I don't actually remember. I think the halakha is you can blow from all horns except from a cow's horn. It's something like that. I don't remember. But it's the animal horn. And the animal, again, takes us back to Korbanot and Korbanot, and the whole cycle. So the sound of the shofar, let's look at that for a moment. You have a tkia, that's the long one. And that's broken into three. Shvarim, which actually means broken. And it's broken into three. Each of those three are broken further into three. That's the trua. I didn't do that quite well, but it's 3, 3, 3. 9 altogether. So it's like a fractal. 1, 3, 9. And then you have the final tkia. So you have a sandwich. Tkia, shvarim, trua, tkia. And then In synagogue, you then blow all the combinations. Tkiah shvarim tkiah, tkiah tuah tkiah, tkiah shvarim tuah tkiah. You blow as many as you can. 100 blows. This sandwich is very interesting. If you remember the diagram I drew, start from the beginning, go to the end, somewhere on the line, along the line, I went off track. The first tkiah, this oneness, this one blast, whole blast, is the wholeness of who you are. This is a reminder of when you and me, when we were in Gan Eden, we were whole human beings. Okay? Hadn't gone wrong yet. Hadn't had time, hadn't had the consciousness, hadn't had reason, or the opportunity. Oh, I don't know about the opportunity, but yes. Okay? That's the oneness. Somewhere along the line, things broke. And we went off course. Comes along the wake-up call. Our response is to cry. Realizing where we are. And I'm not in my flow. My God-given flow. I'm not flowing down the river. I've turned off a tributary. I don't know where I am. And then there's the beginning of the turning that's accompanied by the tears. And when the turn is complete, you come back to the wholeness of your life. Now, if you imagine another drawing I'm going to draw now, I'm going to draw that same line, beginning of the board, all the way up to the top with the arrow. And I'm going to draw a curve that crosses that line back and forth like a snake, or like the sign for healing, right? The snake on the stick, and it's all the time going in the same direction, namely up. But it crosses and then curves back and crosses and curves back and crosses and curves back. Every time it crosses the line, that's when you're in sync with your life flow. And as you then move off the line, as you inevitably do. Doesn't matter how long, how hard I try and how many resolutions I make, this Rosh Hashanah and last Rosh Hashanah and the Rosh Hashanah before, somehow I just couldn't stay on the line. And I slipped off and I've gone. And maybe I made changes during the year and tried to come back and maybe I succeeded. But I ask you, the listener, when you're on the line, do you know that you're on the line? Because I know when I'm on the line. It just feels right. It just feels like easy. You know, even if things are externally not going the way I'd like them to go, but that's also okay. It's just like there is an ease in life. I'm not wading through mud. And I notice many times when I'm on that line that coincidences are happening at high frequency. I could just be thinking about someone, there they are in my life, or the job that I wanted just suddenly appears, it's just like there's a big smile on my face. It just feels right. And whenever I talk to people about this, inevitably everybody knows what I'm talking about when I say, when you're on the line, do you know when you're on the line? Everybody seems to know it. Now you go off the line, you veer off the line, and you're going further and further away from the line. Do you know when you're off the line? Because I know, I'm not able to recognize I'm off the line because I'm so stuck in my own blindness and forgetfulness that I've forgotten it is a line, but I know that I'm stuck or I'm depressed and what's happening in my life? I don't get it. I keep getting ill or keep losing my job or I don't get it. I'm lost somewhere. And I ask you, the listener, again, do you know those moments of being lost, of being so far from that line? And do you know the moments of turning where suddenly, well, somebody said something, somebody helped me, somebody extended a hand to me, I recognize something, and you begin that journey back. I mean, this is it. So the map of our life is this wandering backwards and forwards, crossing the line. Hopefully, if we learn, then the amplitude of the crossing over gets smaller and smaller. So this wave actually sort of is a damped, what we call a damped oscillation, and it collapses onto the line. And that may be with your last breath. Please God, it will be long before then. And here we come, Rosh Hashanah. Wake up. Wake up. Come back. Follow me, says the King. Follow me. I put you here. I gave you your task. Follow me. And we crown the King on that day. Wherever we are in our curve, that's what we really want. We want to follow the King or be with the King. Be in the castle. Be at the banquet. Celebrate. Wherever we are. The King says, come. Come and be with me on this day. And we pick up the shofar and we blow. Woo! Woo! The Tuav joy. To be with the King, it's coronating the King, it's the coronation. You know, I'm from England. You have, you know, the presidential inauguration. It doesn't come quite close to it, but inauguration of a king or a queen, it's like, what a festivity. And we're not even talking now about of basar v'dam, of flesh and blood. We're talking about recognizing God as God, crowning God, bringing God down into our lives. A day full of joy, at the same time as recognizing our own vulnerability. That's the stretch, that's the paradox, the tension in the day. As we recognize our own vulnerability, we still crown the King, and we turn the crying of the Truah into the sound of joy, of laughter. And that lesson I learned in the kindergarten when I took my shofar, and I asked the kids, what does this sound like? With the shofar, blowing from the shofar. And they all looked at me incredulous, eyes wide open. Don't know what I'm talking about. And they just spontaneously burst into laughter. And I learned the greatest secret of how the tears turn into laughter. It's just the other side of the coin. That's the turn. When you get the wake-up call and you recognize the fact that the King wants you back more than anything, wants you back, then the crying of your own distance and isolation turns into the joy, I'm wanted. What more do we ever want in life than to know we're wanted? And God also knows he's wanted. When we want God, God wants us. And it's this dance of lovers. We want each other. And we come out with the honey and the apple, and we sing the great songs, and we have the great banquet, the great meal, and all the families there, and there's the celebration. That is the great day of Rosh Hashanah.
Thank you, Michael.